The following Dharma talk was recorded in June 2015 in St. Louis, Missouri, from the retreat called Awakening Joy, taught by James Barris. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. James Barris is a founding teacher of Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California. His popular online course, Awakening Joy, was featured in O Magazine and published as a book in 2012. James's website is www.awakeningjoy.info.
That's a lot of work. Just say a few words. Here we are coming to a close for the weekend, and wanted to share with you a little bit more of some of the practices and themes of this Awakening Joy approach, and have some time for conversation. Obviously, can't get to in depth all of the different themes for the course. Can't do a 5-month course in 2 days or the next hour, but just to first touch on a little bit of an overview, and then I want to focus on a few, a couple of the themes to take with you. So we've covered intention to put well-being at the center of your life as not only a gift to yourself but to everybody else. And then seeing how mindfulness is a basic tool for awakening joy, as it weakens the unwholesome states and strengthens the wholesome states, and when cultivates the wholesome states, and when applied to a wholesome state, it actually increases it, amplifies it. Then we explore it a bit with gratitude. Anybody watch my mom's YouTube clip last night? Oh, good. She's good, isn't she? She's funny. She was a handful, but always had a good sense of humor. But those last 5 years of her life, just really something changed profoundly. It was amazing. And then touched a bit this morning on opening up to the hard stuff. And I hope I was talking about it with Phil and Amy and Diana. Hope it didn't have too somber an effect on starting your day, but it felt important to really address that and see that not being afraid to open up to the hard stuff is really, your heart opens, if it can open to that and can be tender in that rather than contract, this is a direct pathway to feeling all the love and the wisdom and the kindness and caring and the strength and courage that that can be accessed as you learn more and more to do that skillfully. And I'll just touch on the next two pieces before focusing on later ones. So the fifth in this process, those are the first four. The fifth in the process is what is called in the teachings, and I call it in the chapter, the bliss of blamelessness, which is another way of speaking of integrity. And this is something that the Buddha said is a foundation for inner peace. If you're familiar with the Eightfold Path, three aspects of the Eightfold Path, right speech, or wise or right, interchangeable, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, that in our relating to others in a spirit of non-harming, like those precepts that we took on Friday night, we find inner peace within ourselves. And to the extent that we are out of alignment with our integrity, it's very hard to find that inner peace. So it's not that you're trying to be some kind of holy person or saint. Just for your own self, pragmatically, the more you are connected with your values and not causing harm and suffering, the more you are going to be accessing true inner peace and well-being. And I wanted to read to you a beautiful passage from the Buddha. See if this makes sense to you. He says, "For one who leads a virtuous life, it is a natural law that remorse will not arise. For one free of remorse, it is a natural law that gladness will arise. For one who is glad at heart, it is a natural law that joy will arise." It continues on to talking about all the different states up to full enlightenment. But this is the basic common sense as well as profound teaching. For one who leads a virtuous life, it's a natural law that remorse will not arise. Free of remorse, gladness will arise. Gladness leads to a joyful heart. So we talked about the precepts at the beginning of refraining from causing harm, but they can also be done in a spirit of feeling how good it feels to be aligned with your values. So not just putting on the brakes, but every time there's a choice point, whether or not to click the send button on that email or whatever it is that you're, should I or shouldn't I? They deserve it. And you're going back and forth like that. Go for the high road, because the number of mind moments that you set up on the other end when you do the quick, easy, and self-righteous clearing, like I said up in the group, you know, are you ready for some feedback, as we sometimes can say in California, you know, I have a clearing to do with you, you know. That if you can do it from a place of kindness, it feels so much better. And sometimes I think of the whole spiritual journey as learning the power of delayed gratification, because on the front end it seems so right, and on the back end there can be a whole lot of cleaning up to do. So if you think in terms of how this will feel in retrospect, what am I doing now and how will it feel later, and choose wisely and feel how good it feels every time you're at that choice point, I'm acting wisely. How good that feels. You're setting yourself up for well-being at heart. Now, we're not saints. If you're a saint, please come up and I want to meet you afterwards. We will blow it. And so a very important piece is learning forgiveness for ourselves when we do blow it, because we're human. And that's where it's important to keep on learning, no matter, every time you make a mistake, as one of my inspirations, Julia Butterfly Hill, says, as long as you're learning, there are no mistakes. So keep on learning and being more aligned with your, with integrity, and you're setting yourself up in a very powerful way for inner peace. Okay, that leads to the sixth step, which is letting go. And we could do a whole retreat. We could do a month-long retreat on the different ways that letting go leads to freedom, whether it's letting go of busyness or letting go of stuff or letting go of the stories that we believe that we hold in our mind, or the expression, full expression of letting go, which is generosity. Generosity, as Bridget was saying beautifully yesterday, is a natural expression of a joyful heart. And it feels good to both let go and feel the connection that we have with each other. So every time, like I quoted the Buddha in that discourse, every time in your life that you're about to do something from a spirit of generosity, don't miss it. Not, oh, well, this is the right thing to do. Yeah, it might be the thing that feels right for you, but feel how good it feels to be generous. Just like the Buddha said, thinking I am generous, one gains inspiration in the meaning. Inspiration gladdens the heart. So this is, again, applying that mindfulness to that moment of generosity, or the moment that you're able to let go. Notice how good it feels. Okay, so that's the sixth step. The seventh step, which I want to spend a bit of time with you, is, for me, I think, the key turning point in our development, and it has come up a lot in the groups, and people have brought it up, and it keeps on being a theme, not surprising, and that is learning to love ourselves, learning to really appreciate who we are, first in not being hard on ourselves, but even one step further, to truly embrace who we are. And I did mention when I first got into this stuff. Oh, did I? Yes. Okay. When I first got into this stuff, I didn't like myself very much. And the thought of even liking myself, let alone loving myself, just, you know, is like, I don't think in this lifetime. But I'm here to tell you it's absolutely possible. This is not something that is out of your reach, no matter how strong the conditioning. And it's something that, as I said yesterday, inherently in you, there is something that's rooting for your well-being that is behind everything that you do. And then it's just getting clear with that intention. I really want to go for what genuinely leads to happiness and well-being. It's just activating in a wise way that place that is rooting for you. But the habits are so strong, as so many people have shared over the weekend, to see what's wrong with us. And I wanted to share with you a great passage, if I can find it, that maybe points to another way. This is a passage that you can Google, or it's found in Jack Kornfield's book, the art of forgiveness, loving kindness, and peace. It reads, in the Babemba tribe of South Africa, when a person acts irresponsibly or unjustly, he's placed in the center of the village, alone and unfettered. All work ceases, and every man, woman, and child in the village gathers in a large circle around the accused individual. Then each person in the tribe speaks to the accused one at a time, each recalling the good things the person in the center of the circle has done in his lifetime. Every incident, every experience that can be recalled with any detail and accuracy is recounted. All his positive attributes, good deeds, strengths, and kindnesses are recited carefully and at length. This tribal ceremony often lasts for several days. At the end, the tribal circle is broken. A joyous celebration takes place, and the person is symbolically and literally welcomed back into the tribe. Pretty good tribe to hang out with, isn't it? If you haven't heard that before, if that was the first time you heard it, were you wondering, what are they going to do to this guy? And then when you hear it, doesn't it make sense? They just forgot who they were. And if you keep on looking at yourself through a particular lens of not being good enough or seeing all the flaws that you have, that's what you'll keep seeing. Remember that confirmation bias? But if you remember your goodness, as somebody said up in that last group, was really beautiful, sharing how they remembered when they were a little boy, their true goodness. If you can remember it and see, that's who you are. When the mind isn't confused, and more look for it and see it, that's what gets cultivated. We have all kinds of ideas of who we are, and we are thinking that everybody will find us out, perhaps, or that's our big fear. What if they find out who I really am? Well, here's the cosmic joke. Everybody knows who you really are, or your good friends who care about you and love you know who you really are, and you're often the last person to get it. I mentioned this line that I love from the Course in Miracles, beautiful piece of wisdom from the Christian tradition. Says, believing in your littleness is arrogant because it's preferring your own opinion to God's. Believing in your littleness is arrogant because it's preferring your own opinion to God's. So one of the things that I like to do, that I want to do with you, is share a bit of a loving kindness practice towards yourself that I stumbled upon in one practice period where I was doing focusing on loving kindness in the loving kindness or metta meditation, M-E-T-T-A. There's a formal practice of programming yourself with thoughts of well-wishing towards yourself and towards others. May I be safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease. And you're saying three or four phrases over and over again, and first directing it towards yourself. You start with yourself, and then you direct it towards benefactor, loved one, a neutral person, difficult person, and then all beings. But it starts with yourself. The Buddha said you can look all over the world and not find anyone more worthy of love than yourself. So I was doing this practice. It was a six-week period that I gave myself to just develop these various heart practices, which include loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, but mostly focusing on the first three weeks on loving kindness. And I was spending a week, as is often done, just on myself, just sending thoughts of well-wishing to myself, which can bring up all kinds of thoughts other than well-wishing to yourself. It's a kind of purification process, which I share about in Awakening Joy, that on earlier Loving Kindness retreat, I saw all the awful things I'd done in my lifetime, and that's a very natural part. But on this retreat, I had learned to be a bit kinder, and there I was doing this practice for, it had been going on for about 3 days at this point, and it was okay. I wasn't hard on myself, which was big, and I was basically kind to myself. It wasn't a gusher, but it was okay. And then somebody came to my mind who I knew really loved me. I didn't know why, but I knew this person really loved me, and I thought, this would be so much easier if I could just see what they saw. And then magically in my mind, I connected the dots and asked myself, well, what do they see anyway? Why do they love me so much? And that's when I hit upon this practice, a bit like the Babemba quote. And I want to share it with you just to offer it as another way to do loving kindness towards yourself, or kindness towards yourself. So I'd like you to maybe sit up and at least to be alert, comfortable, and close your eyes for a moment. And bring to mind someone that you share a really warm, easy connection with. It can be a pet, it's fine. It can be a child. It can be a friend. Whoever, just somebody who, when you're with, you both just enjoy, relax, and hanging out together. If there's nobody right now in your life, then it can be somebody from your past. That's okay too. And whatever your experience is just fine. If there's nobody that comes to mind, just hold yourself with great compassion. But if you can bring someone to mind, just imagine they're right here, right in front of you, and looking back at you, maybe smiling, oh, thanks for picking me. And first, feel that sweet flow of energy between you, that sweet connection. So interesting that two people can have a unique flow of energy that isn't there with quite the same way with that we have with others. And as you're feeling that sweet flow between you, for a few moments, imagine that you can inhabit their reality in whatever way works for you. And just imagine seeing their friend through their eyes. What do they see that delights them about you? See if you can notice all the qualities that touch them about you. Maybe your playfulness, your kindness, your creativity, or your compassion, whatever. Just take all of it in and drink yourself in, like one poet says. Just notice all the qualities that you've been gifted with. And from their perspective, just imagine the love and the kindness that, and the wish for happiness that they have for you. That's probably all they wish for you. May you really see all the goodness inside of you as I see it. And get a sense that this being, their friend, deserves to be happy and treated well. And now for a few moments, let your consciousness come back and float back into your own being. And from the inside, stay connected to the qualities that your friend sees. And wish yourself well. If you like, it might be helpful to, once again, put your hand on your heart and just send some kind thoughts to yourself. May I, or may you, whichever first person or second person, see all the goodness inside and share the love that's inside. May I open up to all the happiness and goodness in my life. Just really take that in right through your hand, that well-wishing. When you like, you can open your eyes. If you got a glimpse, if this was more of a workshop than a retreat, what I do in workshops is then have you turn to somebody and share with each other what your friend saw, but we won't do that now. It's not the time, but it's good. If you could see anything that your friend sees, then the jig is up. You can't pretend you're not worthy of kindness. You can't pretend that you don't deserve happiness. And even if you just got a glimpse, if you didn't, that's okay too. It's just where you are now. Accept it. Hold that right where you are. But if you just even got a glimpse, then it's more and more cultivating what you've got in touch with. When I did that, and it was a very profound, real watershed moment in my own practice. It wasn't that I was all of a sudden some kind of amazing human being. It was that I got to see, you know, you're okay. That was enough, you know. You're really a decent human being. Oh, my goodness, you know. No more needing to apologize for who I was or hoping that I'd be found. It's just, you're okay. And it's so interesting that we're often the last people to see who we are. There's a phrase that Albert Einstein says. He says, we live in an optical delusion of consciousness, where we don't see from our own perspective, we don't see reality. Let me ask you, suppose you met somebody who really appreciated your humor, who liked your jokes, who liked your taste, and who understood your take on things. In short, somebody who really got you. How would you feel about meeting someone like that, who really understood you? Wouldn't you be happy? There's one person that gets every joke that goes through your head. Only one. Unfortunately, they're right inside your own skin. But if you met yourself from the outside, you'd probably be saying, where have you been all my life? Finally, somebody gets it. You would be thrilled. And yet, when we are from the inside, I don't know if I'm good enough, all of that. Don't believe that. It's just habit. It's just habit of mind. And the more you can see who you are, the more you'll see who all of your friends who love you see, rather than looking at it through that filter. And one thing that I mentioned upstairs when this came up is there's a kind of balance between celebrating who you are. Wow, there's a good heart in here. There's some, whatever it is, creativity or intelligence or whatever, playfulness or loyalty, all of those things. To celebrate it and at the same time to not take ownership of it. Because they're just qualities that life has gifted you with. And so the other side of celebrating is a real humility where you can't so much take credit for your good heart. It's just something that was given to you, the divine spark, perhaps you could say. And ultimately, does it make sense to say, my unconditional love is better than your unconditional love? It doesn't make any sense. And really, when there's that love between people, it's just love finding itself. And as you are more in touch with your own genuine good heart, it awakens that in others. When you're around somebody who has that kind of good heart and you can feel their kindness, how do you feel? It awakens, you relax and it awakens that in you. So we can be reminders for each other. And here's one real essence of this awakening joy. And that is that the more you look for the good, the more you'll find it. And so all of this can really be boiled down to keep looking for the good inside and outside. That same confirmation bias, it has a powerful corollary. And that is, not only will you find it, more likely find what you're looking for, but you actually draw out the goodness of others. Suppose somebody comes into a room that you're in and you can sense that they're judging you and they're looking for all your flaws. How do you feel? Flawed or small or defensive. Somebody else might come into that room who knows all your foibles, but they're just looking and seeing how beautiful you are. How do you feel? You feel beautiful. So this is not a small thing to look for the good, and just you actually activate and bring it out in others. This has been a main practice of mine for many years, that I first was inspired by Neem Karoli Baba from Ram Dass's books, Be Here Now, which was a transformative book for me. And he said, the best form to worship God is every form, which is, I took to mean, keep looking for the good. It is a great way to go through your life. And you'll see some other stuff too. It's not like it's all good, of course. You know, let's not be naive. But the more you can see it, the more people enjoy being around you, and you bring it right out of them. So that leads to the next step, the eighth step, which is connection with others. And obviously this is one of the most powerful sources of joy. When we feel that connection with others, when we feel that caring, it's the opposite of disconnection and isolation. We love to love. And if you, as somebody was saying before, you know, just want to be loved, just want to know that they're okay. And the more you can extend that to them, the more you awaken it in them, whether that's a spirit of friendliness or delight in their happiness, or the next step, which is the compassionate heart. And I'll just say a little bit about that, and then we'll have some time for conversation. So the ninth step is compassion, that we are wired up to care. Just like when you go to a movie and you see the hero or the heroine and they're in danger and you're saying, oh my goodness, I hope they make it through. Why is that? Because we are wired up to care, and we pay good money to root for the heroine or hero to make it through. And when they succeed, as often happens, not always, but often, go, yes! Just like when you root for your team, which I'm going to be doing tonight. Yes! Like that. And it's such a good feeling to care about others. Compassion in Buddhist teachings is one of the sublime states, one of the four divine abodes or sublime states. As I just mentioned, I think before, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And compassion is defined as the quivering of the heart in response to suffering. That when we see suffering, that is the natural response for the heart that's present and not closed. And I always find it interesting to reflect that the sublime state of compassion requires suffering. Not that suffering is sublime, suffering is not sublime, but it evokes that quality of caring that is sublime. That we have a caring heart, and we have mirror neurons in our brain, that when you see somebody else stub their toe, you feel it in the same place in your brain. Or when you see somebody crying, you're touched in and can empathize with their reality. So this leads to caring, putting your caring into action, which is one of the most profound and noble sources of awakening joy. That expressing your caring in the world is really what all of this is leading towards. Not that you're supposed to save the world or be a do-gooder so everybody sees how wonderful you are, but because it feels so good to be there for others. Given your limited amount of energy, you need to include yourself in that compassion so you're not just, coming from a dry well. But when you feel the energy, that's where the real joy is. Martin Seligman in Authentic Happiness, the father of positive psychology, he said he found, and this is the basis of all positive psychology, that true happiness, authentic happiness, is identifying your own gifts and sharing them in the world, making a difference in the world. And right now, the world really needs your caring. So I just want to say a few words so that you understand, if you're new to practice or if you have one particular slant on practice, that this is not merely a self-indulgent expression of well-being, that this is about making a difference in the world. The world right now is crying out for more consciousness. And if you only see practice as something that brings you calm and makes you feel at ease and reduces your stress, all of those things are really wonderful. But to find what moves you and expressing your caring. One inspiration of mine, a man named Andrew Harvey, wrote a beautiful book called The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism. And he says, he talks about following your heartbreak. That's one of his beautiful pieces of advice. Follow your heartbreak. Where your heart is breaking, that might be just the place that you are moved to make a difference in the world. There's many places, whether it's racial injustice, and I know this area is quite aware of that, as you know, so many people around the country and the world have been focusing on this area and really feeling the pain of inequity and unfairness and injustice, or gender discrimination, or the environment. For me, my heartbreak in the last few years has been about climate change. And as one friend of mine says, we're in a race between fear and consciousness. And consciousness trumps fear in the long run. But it's going to be interesting to see how this race plays out. And the more we can bring consciousness into the world, the greater the possibility of this humanity species waking up. As Andrew Harvey says, we are right now in the dark night of the species, just like the dark night of the soul is a spiritual journey that most everybody goes through, the hero's journey. And right now, humanity is in the dark night of the species, where there is a lot of suffering probably coming down the pike, but it also gives a possibility of shaking up, waking up an unsustainable system and the possibility of a new awakening. So for me, climate change has been a really big one. And I recommend you checking out, if that's something that's that you're drawn to, a really wonderful website called OneEarthSangha.org that I'm very involved with. And a lot of Dharma teachers have been involved in this. And there's going to be, by the way, I'll just plug a training online in September, an eco-sattva training for people who want to see how Dharma practice can be applied to climate change. Anyway, whatever it is for you that moves you, as Angelus Arian, another teacher of mine, says, action absorbs anxiety. Rather than just feeling frustrated and helpless, when you put yourself in motion, and particularly when you do it with others, it changes from despair and helplessness into inspiration. There's studies that have shown that when you hold somebody's hand, your level of, your threshold of pain, physical pain as well as psychological, emotional pain, goes way up. We know that's true. You don't need a study to know that. When you're going through a hard time, holding somebody's hand makes a difference, and or somebody being there. And in the same way, when you put yourself in motion and follow your heartbreak and are there with others who really care, there's a kind of synergy that you're not feeling alone. This is from Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is the premier translator of Theravadan Buddhism. He says, and he's become an incredible, inspiring activist. This is from an essay called A Challenge to Buddhists that you can Google. It's an excellent essay by Bhikkhu Bodhi, B-O-D-H-I. He says, if Buddhism in the West becomes solely a means to pursue personal spiritual growth, I'm apprehensive that it may evolve in a one-sided way and thus fulfill only half its potential. Attracting the affluent and the educated, it will provide a congenial home for the intellectual and cultural elite, but it will risk turning the quest for enlightenment into a private journey that, in the face of the immense suffering which daily hounds countless human lives, can present only a resigned quietism. The special challenge facing Buddhism in our age is to stand up as an advocate for justice in the world, a voice of conscience for those victims of social, economic, and political injustice who cannot stand up and speak for themselves. This, in my view, is a deeply moral challenge, marking a watershed in the modern expression of Buddhism. I believe it also points in a direction that Buddhism should take if it is to share in the Buddha's ongoing mission to humanity. So this is a source of joy, actually, as Julia Butterfly Hill, who, as I said, was an inspiration to me, talks about it being a joyful responsibility. If you don't know her, she's a one who was up in a redwood tree for 2 years in during El Nino in 1998 to preserve to protect the old growth redwoods. Very inspiring person, and when she gives talks, she's very charismatic and electric, and people come up to her at the end. She often says that, and people will come up and say, "Oh, Julia, you've inspired me so much." And her response is, "Oh, that's so wonderful. Inspired you to do what?" It's one thing to be inspired. It's another to find what you want to put that inspiration into. So to see this awakening of your aliveness and connection as a springboard for you making a difference in the world. The world needs your caring. The world needs your love and your wisdom and your consciousness. Don't feel you've got to save it. It's not up to you to save it. You just do your part from a place of joy, and that will be good enough. And when I say from a place of joy, I mean, of course, there's anger and there's outrage and there's frustration and there's all kinds of feelings that are difficult in response to the ignorance or the suffering around. But don't let your actions come from that, because all that does is polarize. If you can go underneath the anger and the outrage, all of those feelings are coming from a place of real caring, which is another way of saying of real love. So if you can get in touch with the love and the caring that's underneath all of that frustration and let your actions come from that, that's the joyful responsibility, and that's very magnetizing. And that might mean just being with your dying relative, or with somebody, people close in your life, or it might mean something else that moves you. But I hope you see that expressing your caring and expressing your love and expressing your joy is a very integral part of fullness of awakening and awakening joy. And then the last of these steps is the joy of simply being. And I basically just want to let you know that all of those other steps that have been trying to cultivate, whether it's compassion or gratitude or love or whatever, are really profound sources of well-being. But the deepest one, along with compassion, is realizing who you really are and coming into a place of deep peace and freedom and wholeness, and letting your actions come from that. And this is where the meditation is so powerful, because as you connect with that place of peace inside, that becomes the source of all your actions. So that's the story. 10 states, intention, mindfulness, gratitude, working with the difficult, integrity, letting go, loving ourselves, loving others, compassion, and simply being. So we can take some time. And Phil said he just has a couple of announcements. So we can take some time now, maybe the next 10 or 15 minutes or so, and see if there's any questions that have come up from the weekend or anything that that feels like you want to bring up. At what point do you begin to take on a new perspective with opening up to the positive?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a process, and it's a practice, and it's not that all of a sudden there's a tipping point and no return, but it just becomes more and more the lens and the place that you come from. So there's no timeline. It's like the Dalai Lama was asked, what's the difference between Western students and Eastern students? And he said, impatience. Sometimes it's called McDharma, the McDharma syndrome, you know? And we want a quick hit. But if the way I see it, if you're facing in the right direction and you stay connected to your intention, then little by little, it starts to change. And here's a secret. I don't think I've mentioned it. I put it in the book. It's easy to see when you blow it. Oh, who was I kidding? Awakening joy. There you are, just negative again. Don't be discouraged by seeing your habits. Actually, every time you see your habits of conditioning that don't serve you, if you can see them without judgment, then you are changing around your relationship to them. Pema Chodron, who's a wonderful teacher, has this beautiful line. She says, take delight in that which sees the dukkha. Take delight in seeing your confusion, because there's an awareness that seeing, oh, you just got confused, dear. And every time you do remember to notice the good, celebrate it. This feels really good. Let it register. So rather than focusing on, oh, you blew it again, who are you kidding? It's like, oh, I see, I'm seeing it, I'm waking up, how good that I'm seeing it. And every time you do remember to take in the good, ah, how good that feels. And then it's a gradual process of changing around your neural pathways, neurons that fire together, wire together. And I would say in not that long a time, if you stay connected with your intention and have the support of like-minded friends, which makes a huge difference, if you practice both meditate and practice looking for the good for 1 month, and you really make it the centerpiece of your spiritual practice, you might see a difference. And as the Dalai Lama says, rather than look over, well, has it changed since last week or last month? He suggests looking over a 5 or 10 year period. You know, this is, you've been practicing things for a long way. A long time, another way. So just notice the shift. I mean, what's your alternative? To keep on cultivating greed, hatred, and delusion? You might as well anyway practice another way. So be very patient. It takes patience and it takes an intention. And as long as you're facing in the right direction, it's happening.
Kind of a follow-up from our small group, but an edge that I've worked with for years is this discernment between love and attachment in very close relationships, where there's an awareness of a deep abiding love, but also an attachment. I mean, within the attachment, then there's, again, this soup for really negative interactions to occur.
Right.
And so there's this, a lot of my practice is often trying to discern this or trying to even open to the reality that they can both exist at the same time, that there can be deep abiding love, but also attachment that pulls into really negative.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So, and your question?
I don't know. That's the question over and over. I mean, how to, I mean, it's really how to work with that all the time. And, oh, yeah, the question is protection versus self-care and self-love.
Okay.
So protection may be removing yourself from a situation or a person
maybe
that you love very, very much.
That's true. Okay, so the discernment between love and attachment in these teachings. Love is that metta where you're just, it's an outflow. You're not wanting anything from. And just like in Corinthians, what love is not, not wanting, not coercive. And attachment, which is the pain, what we think of as the pain of love. And it's called the near enemy of loving kindness. It looks like it's disguised as loving kindness, but it's really painful. How to discern the difference? Okay. Here's a little quick exercise for you to just notice the difference. All right. For a moment, close your eyes. Bring to mind someone who's really important to you. And this can be a complicated relationship, probably for the purposes of this question. It can be a really important relationship, not a perfect relationship. Now, as you bring this person to mind, first get in touch with the fact that you really care about them and want to see them happy. Maybe in their best moments have an image of them and just wish them well. You might send thoughts like, may you really be happy and know that I really do care about you. And notice how that feels inside, how it feels in your body and in your mind and in your heart. May you really be happy. And now for a moment, get in touch with how it feels when you want something from them, when you hope that they don't disappoint you, when you have an agenda for them or are afraid they're going to blow it. Are they going to come through? And now notice how it feels in your body, in your mind, in your heart. I won't leave you here. Take a nice breath. And now once again, go back to the first where you truly just wish them to be happy. I want you to know I really care and want to see you happy and hope you feel my love for you. But just know that it's there. And notice how it feels to not have an agenda and just wish them well. Okay, you can open your eyes. Notice any difference? Just in one moment, the person who opens your heart, as soon as you have an agenda, it gets closed. Now, how does it feel, you being on the receiving end, if you know that somebody is wishing you well and delighting in your happiness, how do you feel around them? Probably pretty good. And how does it feel when there's an agenda? Oh, they want this from me. Do you step into their space and say, oh yes, what can I do for you? There might be a little bit of resistance. So it's this paradox that the more we want, the more people pull away. And the more we come from love, the more people enter into it. And relationships are complicated, I understand. But just seeing that, knowing that this is a much more effective way to have people hear you. And if they can feel your underlying love rather than your fear that they're going to blow it, they're a lot more likely to enter into your sphere. But as you said about protection, there might be times where this is not a healthy relationship. And you first need to take care of yourself, not blaming, but just taking care of yourself. because everybody has their own reality. I was saying this upstairs. You know, the Dalai Lama has this great teaching. He says, when somebody does something that's upsetting to you, understand that it's probably not that they're trying to upset you. It's just that their internal reality is intersecting with your internal reality in a way that does not match up with your hopes and expectations. But everybody has their own reality that makes sense to them. No matter how warped it is, it makes sense to them. And so if you can understand that and remove the blame, but take care of yourself, you really need to take care of yourself and have healthy boundaries when you need it. You can still have the love and wish them well, but you don't need to put yourself in a situation that doesn't serve you. And that's something you just have to listen inside to what the truth is. Because if you quiet down enough, you'll probably be able to hear it. Okay. Anything? Maybe one last question, if there's something that's burning before. Oh, good. All questions answered, huh? I was afraid that I keep on talking and there'd be 10 people that were going away saying, and get to my question. But it's all answered, right? That's awakening joy inside of me. Uh-huh. As Phil is coming up with some announcements, I just want to say I really have enjoyed so much spending the weekend and coming out from California to visit St. Louis and see what you guys are up to. And you've got a really good community here, and I hope you feel part of it and value it and let it nourish you, and also be part of it that you can share your own goodness as well. And remember that the more you awaken your own well-being, the more everybody gets the benefit. So thank you so much.